This is a HeadGum Original.
Arthur, has the band Survivor ever appeared on the television show Saturday Night Live?
No, they have not.
Never? Not even in 1982 when this song came out?
No, I don't think so. I'm a little blurry on the early 80s, but I don't believe they ever performed on SNL.
Okay, how about Sylvester Stallone?
He hosted Saturday Night Live on September 27th, 1997.
He never did it for the Rocky movies.
No, he did it for the movie he's most known for, Copland.
And not even Judge Dredd?
Not even Judge
Dredd. Not even Dredd, Demolition Man,
not
Copland?
Even Throw Mama from the Train. Was he in that or no?
You're mixing him up with, people commonly do this, you're mixing him up with Danny DeVito.
Oh, okay, yes. Jamiroquai was the musical guest for that. So
for 1997, September?
September 27th. And
that's the beginning of the season. He might have been the first host.
It was the season premiere.
It was the season premiere?
And season premiere, 1982, Queen played Another One Bites the Dust, which I don't know if you also read this on the Wikipedia page, was the song that Sylvester Stallone had hoped would be the song from Rocky II.
Yeah, everybody wanted Another One Bites the Dust for Rocky. But it's a sequel. Queen doesn't stoop to sequels. They don't license their songs for sequels.
So who was hosting with Queen?
Chevy Chase.
This is a twisted skill.
Yeah, it's very... It's totally useless.
How did you gain this twisted skill?
When I was a kid, on my 13th birthday, I had a sleepover with some friends, and we watched David Duchovny host the Saturday Night program with musical guest Rod Stewart. And from that week on, I taped every episode on VHS, watched the tapes over and over, became obsessed with the show, bought a book that listed all the dates of all the episodes, and looked at the book. I never set out to memorize the dates, but I looked at the book so frequently that the dates became embedded.
Are there some things you have memorized that you've never seen? Like, or have you never seen a certain 80s episode? But you're like, but yeah, I have the host.
Yeah, there's probably a musical. There might be a couple. Yeah.
Now you worked for some period of time on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Yes.
Do you tell him about the skill on day one? On day one, the first time you meet him, you're like, first episode, 1997, September, and you just tell him all the episodes he was ever in, or do you save that for day two?
At some point, he found out about it. I think it was because he was mentioning that the first big thing he ever did on the show was he played these like...
You corrected him, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I corrected him on his own. He had mentioned that, you know, he used to play these songs on Weekend Update. And the first one he ever did was Halloween songs. And he said it was his third episode. But it wasn't. It was his fourth episode.
And you told him.
I told him. I said it was October 24th, 1998, about a year and a month after the Stallone episode. And I said this was Ben Stiller and it was Alanis Morissette was the fourth episode.
You get a spit take?
I would have if he was drinking something. Yeah.
So at that point, did he start quizzing you? Did he start?
Probably. I remember. So I once years later, I auditioned for SNL. And I remember he was encouraging me to, in my audition, do a bit where I would say the dates of the episodes and stuff. And I remember thinking, I don't think this would be really good on SNL.
Yeah, it's an amazing party trick.
But would it be an ingratiating stunt for the people that are in the room?
I almost feel like it would be the opposite of that.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit too teacher's petty.
Yes.
Exactly. You don't want to roll in teacher's
petty. Great party trick, great podcast trick.
Yes.
But not a great SNL audition.
Not a great SNL audition. Yeah.
Well, Arthur, thank you so much for coming back this week to talk about Survivor. We're just amped out of our head and amazed that Survivor was never on SNL.
Me too. I could be wrong, but I think I'm right.
We're back with Arthur Meyer. What a treat. What a true blessing it is to have a return guest on the show who's such an overachiever. We're talking about how you don't want a teacher's pet in your Saturday Night Live audition. You know, you don't want to show up with that energy, just trying to butter Lorne up and win out of nepotism or whatever. But you do want to come on this show with that teacher's pet energy, and that's absolutely what you did when we had you a few months ago.
And you ingratiated yourself to us.
Yes, absolutely.
In a hurry.
I want to impress you guys. I want you to like me.
Well, usually people come in and us going away and making the punch up is kind of like a magic trick to them. They, we talk about the song, but Evan and I come up with idea pretty much on our own what we're going to do for the punch up. And you came in, you had maybe four or five pitches for us.
Yes.
We did John Lennon's Imagine the last time you were in.
Yeah.
Great episode. If you guys haven't listened to that episode, I highly recommend going back and listening to the John Lennon Imagine episode with Arthur. And you pitched us, what did we ended up doing? We ended up doing like a version of Imagine where John Lennon is bragging about how much better he is
at imagining
you.
Yeah.
But there was also an amazing element to it where you had imagined, dare I say, a version of history in which John Lennon was still making music in the 1980s.
Yes.
And as so many stars of his age did in the 1980s, tried their hands at rapping.
Of course.
And so you rapped a whole rap for us that you had prepped. We had no idea you were going to do this. I laughed harder than I have for the rest of the whole podcast while you were rapping the rap. And we polished up the rap. We added some stuff in the rap to surprise you. But that I love. I play the rap for people just for fun. I'm just I love it.
I played it for my son. He didn't have any. He's 6 months old, so he had no discernible reaction.
Yeah, but this was the way that he learned about rap.
Yes,
rap
exactly. Exists.
And about John Lennon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's just say what we just described is a preview of what we're about to do, because you're listening to Punch Up the Jam, a show in which we take songs that you probably know, they're super famous, we talk about them, we talk them to death, quite frankly, and then we make them better. We produce a better version. It's actually always worse, but we pretend it's better. And
some of them are better.
Yeah.
A lot of them are better.
Okay, often better because we do receive some flawed products here. Even if the Billboard charts and culture would say otherwise, the songs are flawed. The songs are flawed. And we've already gotten straight into it, but I just want to properly welcome to the show, dear friend of the show, friend of the pod, Arthur Meyer, with a resume littered with jaw-dropping feats. This man worked on The Tonight Show and managed to get himself on the air naked.
More than once.
More than once. Arthur, last time you're on, it's been a few months and I really should have done my due diligence, but the seasons have ripened. What should we be pushing people to go watch and listen to now?
Oh, okay. That's a good question. Well, I just finished writing for a show, like a sitcom. Do people still use the word sitcom? No.
They do?
Okay.
They do, yeah.
So it's going to be coming out probably sometime next year, but it's called Dinner with the Parents, and it's a American adaptation of this British series by this dude, Robert Popper. Did you ever see that show, Look Around You?
The harmonica player in Blues Traveler.
You're thinking of John Popper, or maybe I'm thinking of, I forget which one's Robert and which one's John, but anyway, this they're doing a show based on that show. And
okay. See the guy who is an appetizer at Applebee's that you can get?
You're thinking of Jalapeno Popper. And yes, I did use the singular on that.
Arthur, did Blues Traveler ever play on SNL?
Oh, geez, let me think.
They must have.
They September did? 30th, 1995.
I can't stop.
Host Mariel Hemingway.
But that's pre their appearance in Blues Brothers 2000.
Wow. Yeah.
But that's where they made the connect with Lorne. They're like, hey, if you ever make another Blues Brothers movie, like maybe I can just...
You go on the show, you just get to be in one of the also-ran movies.
We will watch your career with great interest.
So what led you to choose the song Survivor for it? You sent us, before we did Imagine, you sent us a list of songs that you wanted to do, like 8 or 10 long, and all of them were perfect. there were some really good ones on the list. YMCA sticks out in my mind, but Survivor was on the list, and that's what we settled on for this time. What was it that made you put Survivor on the
list? I should correct you, because you keep calling it the song Survivor.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, Eye of the Tiger by the band Survivor.
Easy mix-up. It even rhymes with itself.
It does, and also they use the word a ton of times in the song, I believe. And the song was almost called Survival.
Yeah, kind of, you know, medium-sized Virgin Energy to put your own band name in your hit song a lot.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, I had, we used to do a bit on the Tonight Show program called First Drafts of Rock. And there were, we did it with Kevin Bacon a lot. And I pitched a first drafts for Eye of the Tiger, but Kevin Bacon couldn't do it because it was out of his vocal range.
Yeah, so it's out of everyone's vocal range.
It's really hard. I remember trying to record a scratch track at some point, and I couldn't even do it.
It's one of the screamiest, highest beltingest songs in the classic rock literature.
Yeah,
and that's really saying something in a genre that also includes Freddie Mercury and Steve Perry.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, no one even really knows the members of the band Survivor. I mean, so you're not even thinking about the band members who made it.
It's impossible to know the members of the band Survivor.
Oh, no.
Because they've had, like, the craziest number of lineup changes.
Oh, is that true?
Any band I've ever seen.
Wow.
You know, on the bottom of Wikipedia, there are those graphs where you see, like, the lines of like when a member was in the band and when they leave.
Uh-huh. I like those.
And there's usually one line that continues the whole time because it's actually the lead singer's vehicle, right? And you could sub out a drummer. But they have sort of nuts backstories to how they even arrived to be a band. You want to lay it out, Andrew?
Well, did you see why they're called Survivor? Because the name of the band is not Eye of the Tiger.
Right.
The name of the band is definitely Survivor. And they didn't pull it out of a hat. They didn't. They wasn't just like rolling the dice. Like, what about Beatles? But it's Beatniks. You know, what if it was? You know, they didn't just pull it out of a hat about just like, oh, this type of noun will be our band name.
But there was an actual reason behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was that?
It's because the main guy in the band, who actually isn't the lead singer, the main guy in the band, and he's also not the guy who's been in the band nonstop.
Right.
The guy's name is Jim Peterick.
Yeah.
He was in a band called Chase. And Chase was kind of like a one-hit-ish wonder funk band in the 70s that did that song, I got to get it on, I got to get it on, I got to get it on, with the crazy trumpet lines.
You just described 85 funk songs.
I only know it. The only reason I know the song is because we played it in high school marching band. It's just a high school marching band director's...
What did you play in marching band?
The trumpet.
Oh, okay.
And it's a high school marching band's like wet dream because the trumpet line is so beautiful, but it's also like... It's a trap. It's a trap because a high school marching band director hears it on the radio,
mm-hmm.
sees it at the marching band convention, the sheet music, and is like, this is the perfect song for my marching band. And then they go back, and they have the trumpet section that they have. And the trumpet section that they have is not the trumpet section that the band Chase had. And they can't play that nicely.
Surely a high school band director would know this. They would know the skill level.
They should, but that's how good the song Get It On is.
Oh.
Is that it sucks you into its honeypot and makes you think, certainly... With months of rehearsal over the summer, my trumpet section would be able to play this, but they can't.
They can't.
Mm-hmm.
They can't.
So you've played that song.
I
Get
played
it
that
on
song
by Chase.
By Chase. And Jim Peterick was in Chase,
mm-hmm.
and missed a gig that they were going to. It was a state fair or a county fair. They were on a flight, and they crashed and died. The whole band.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Whoa.
And do we know why he missed it?
I could not find out why he missed it. I don't know if he called in sick. I don't know if it was like a really big band, so they were just like, oh, we'll take this other guitar player instead of you. He was working as a jingle writer. Maybe he was just like, I'm working. Like, maybe the band wasn't big enough to like take everybody.
He didn't want to do the state fair gig.
He felt like he had survived. He felt like I really dodged a bullet. And him and the original drummer and the original bass player for Survivor, which he kicked out of the band before Eye of the Tiger came out, were all in Chase. Like, all of them had survived this plane wreck.
Oh, my gosh.
Which you don't hear about. Chase, you hear about the Buddy Holly.
The Big Bopper
plane wreck. You hear about that one.
Richie Valens.
Yeah, this was sort of the D-list plane crash.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad. Because the song...
You can't hear about every plane crash. Once you get past the Big Bopper, Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and I think there was even another dude. And then you find out about Otis Redding.
Right.
Yeah. That at that point, you're done. You don't want to hear about more plane crashes. You don't have room in your heart to learn about Chase going down.
Yeah. You skip that one and you go to the one where Lynyrd Skynyrd almost died in the plane wreck. No, some of them died in a plane wreck too.
Wow.
Anyway.
I didn't know that about Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah. Peterick also has another hit that I know you know, Evan, because we also played in the high school marching band, Vehicle. He's not even the singer in Survivor.
But that's a different band.
But he sings Vehicle.
That's a different band.
Yeah. He was just like this guy in Chicago who's like in different bands. He was professionally jingle writing. And like after Vehicle and after Chase, he kind of was going to give up.
He's the singer?
He had been the singer of Vehicle, but he's not the singer of Eye of the Tiger and Survivor, which is crazy because he sounds great on Vehicle. But he gets together with Frankie Sullivan, the lead guitar player, the only guy who's been in the band for all of Survivor's existence.
So Frankie Sullivan is the backbone of Survivor.
Somehow he is, yes. They're all constantly kicking out lead singers. The lead singer from Eye of the Tiger, they kick out because he had to have vocal surgery, because he had to sing this song too much.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, you're out of here, which is just mean. That's just mean to kick out the lead singer who you gave vocal notes. He had to have surgery.
That's cruel, but it is. I mean, it's the early 80s. It's before we knew how to take out the vocal notes. Yeah. The man could not be Celine Dion'd back to his former heights. They had to kick him to the curb. He's like an injured soldier. You don't send him back to the front lines.
But in the twisted graph of Survivor lineup 7, Dave Bickler's coming back.
What?
You're kicking him out in the 80s, but he's coming back. I mean, he still has pipes. And
he recovered.
And I hate to break it to you this early in the episode, but it also brings us to your least favorite segment in the show. Then you get and you know what? I want to mix it up this week, Evan. I've been thinking Venmo's not paying us any money
for promoting Venmo. Their money
transfer
product.
Why am I Venmoing you $5 if you know, Venmo can Venmo me $5,000 if they want to sponsor the segment. Till then, you're going to get this crisp $5 bill if you can tell me.
Oh, hell yeah, Andrew. That's mercenary. I'd love to see
this. This blew my mind. You can get the $5 too if you want.
Okay.
Are there? So Dave Bickler, he's in and out of Survivor. He's out in the 80s. In the early 2000s, he is tapped to sing an advertising campaign. And the advertising campaign does so well, is so iconic, that they print a CD of the ad campaign. This is how good of a singer Dave Bickler is. That first of all, the ad campaign is like, we've got to get Bickler. Second of all, he does such a good job that people are like, we need a fucking CD of this ad.
Everyone's rocking out to this
ad
so
hard. And the CD sells 400,000 copies.
What?
Yes. The CD is a hit.
This ad almost
went gold.
That's
how good Dave Bickler is at singing. And they kick him out of the band. What ad campaign did Dave Bickler sing?
Oh, wow.
What ad campaign? Okay, all I'm doing is just thinking about this song. I am the tiger. And I'm trying to transpose that.
Yes,
consumer
I'm putting the $5
products
back in my pocket.
I'm trying to think of words that rhyme with
the
tiger.
The feel of cotton, fabric of our lives.
You got the vibe. That's the vibe of the ad.
Yeah.
The Detroit Tigers.
Yeah. Okay.
It's
smart.
Not the Detroit Tigers.
No, it's got to be a consumer product. Otherwise, it's probably freaking breakfast cereal. It's What is a commercial that will be broad enough that everybody will be seeing this? Okay, there's a famous song for Coca-Cola. It's Too Touchy Feely. That's not him. He's rocking out. Could be Like a Rock, but that's Bob Seger. That's not Bickler. That's Seger. Okay, I go in breakfast cereal. Lucky Charms.
I'm calling.
Final answer.
It's Real Men of Genius. The Budweiser ads. Real Men of Genius.
Oh,
he's just singing about Real Men of Genius. With like, there's the voiceover. There's the voiceover, and then the guy's just wailing in the background. That's Dave Bickler.
Wow.
I don't know this. The title Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius means nothing to you.
No. Wow. Budweiser ad. I definitely buy that.
Are you down with the Real Men of Genius ads?
Yeah, we hang out every Tuesday and we lament our group. Yeah,
Evan found this clip from Rocky III. This is the theme song for Rocky III. Mm-hmm. It wins a Grammy. It's nominated for an Oscar.
It's all over the movie. Don't they play at the beginning and the end of the movie and into like a montage?
But there's a scene where Apollo Creed. This is the movie where Apollo Creed starts coaching Rocky.
Yes.
To beat Clubber Lang.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
And there's this scene where he's like, you used to have the eye of the tiger. Like, now you lost it.
Oh, he says
you
that?
You don't have the eye of the tiger anymore. Which really made me wonder, Stallone wanted Another One Bites the Dust to be the theme song, and Queen wouldn't license it. Like, in a previous script, was...
You don't want to just be another one who bites the dust.
You out there biting the dust, Rocky. Another one bites the dust. That's you.
Other people
Another gets on. Another gets on.
That's so funny. They're like, look, I know it's a lovely day outside, Rocky, but it's not about outside. It's about in the ring.
Rocky, you're keeping yourself locked down, but you're a bird that's free. You're free. Get out there, Rocky. Let yourself fly. Fly free.
But with Survivor... Or else you'll be back there and going back to the YMCA, Rocky.
I mean, I think it went the other way with Survivor. I think they gave them the assignment, like, write a song called Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, the they script, told...
But maybe... But yeah. I don't know. Did Survivor write Eye of the Tiger first? And they were like, here's the song. And he was just slipping it into the script. Good.
Yeah. I'm just going to play the opening instrumental.
Oh, I love the opening.
Because you have to get in the zone. We're talking about this song, and this song is all about mood and energy and testosterone.
Yeah, yes. and that scene where Rocky and Apollo Creed are running down the beach in their short shorts, it's about that, too.
Oh, yeah. And they're, like, cut off, midriff revealing
tiny shorts.
Yeah.
Men with short shorts.
This rules.
It really does.
That's all you need to know. It's just these guitars hitting so hard with the cymbal. Oh, yeah. Just picturing the drummer on that cymbal just waiting for his time.
I mean,
and
what?
Then you grab the cymbal. That's pure energy right there. It's not just about the notes. It's not just about the cymbal crashes. It's about the silence in between.
What slaps is like that's the straight... The straight on the rhythm guitar. And then the whole band is hitting off. And then when they hit with the guitar, it's so satisfying.
Yeah.
You mean the band is hitting syncopated hits?
Yes.
Yeah. And Andrew brings this up occasionally. So I just want to sit on it for a minute, talk about this for a minute. In my music theory corner. What Andrew's talking about when he talks about, like, oh, the guitars and the bass are syncopated on this thing, it's definitely the case here, is that, like, as a human, you can feel the beat of this song, boom, boom. And so if you were writing the most square version of a melody or of a riff, say the version that, like, a Mozart would write in 1790, it would be like...
That's a sick Mozart burn. Was a little Salieri over here.
Yeah, people didn't know about syncopation back then. You put the notes on the beat, so it would be like dun 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 bum 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 beep boop beep boop beep 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 bum bum, and it'll always end on the beat, right? So to do something syncopated means you put it in front of the beat so it doesn't land on the beat there. You're feeling the beat here. And so the square version would be bump 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 bump. That's like the essence. Oh. If you were to boil down the rhythm of this thing, like three strong beats. So to put it in front of the beat, bum bum bum, it happens early. And your body feels that. That's the essence of like AC/DC. They play the most simple riffs in every song. But if you play dut bum bum bum, no one would ever rock out to that. But when they do Highway to Hell with boom 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 bum, and it lands before the beat. Your body feels it, makes you swing, makes you tap. So I actually
makes
cut
it very
together.
Memorable,
I cut together a version as a demo of what this opening guitar riff would sound like with no syncopation, because I knew Andrew was going to bring
it up. Wow.
It's so square. It's so square.
Would that ever be a hit?
The syncopated makes it so memorable too. Like the, I don't know. It's just a world record riff.
Yeah,
one of the greatest riffs ever.
That's so,
so much tension. So much tension building with when is the band going to come in syncopated against the guitar, and when is the band going to land with the guitar? It builds so much tension and so much release. Mm-hmm. Just like, dare I say it, a boxing match.
Oh yes.
Yeah, the boxing match, one of the biggest things I'm wondering whenever I watch a boxing match, which is so frequently, is when are they going to hit?
Yeah, I always want...
Are they going to hit each other, and are they going to hit each... At what time will they hit?
Yeah.
You don't know.
A lot of boxing coaches say if you're going to go into a boxing match, the key is to know exactly when your opponent is always going to hit you, and then you'll win.
Yeah, I remember that part actually in Rocky 1, when his very famous trainer, with a man I definitely remember, says, Rocky, when he thinks you're going to hit him before that. That's syncopation.
That's so funny.
That's syncopation, Rock.
Little music lesson for you.
You gotta get up. You gotta have the ear of the syncopator.
Ear of the syncopator.
Hey, we call it sound and vision, Rocky. Sound and vision.
That's when they were trying to get David Bowie on.
That's
the soundtrack.
That's so funny.
Yeah. It's David Bowie, coach.
Imagine if that was the training montage pump-up song. Sound and vision.
Great song.
Do we know anything else about how they got signed up for the movies? I'm kind of obsessed with the movie soundtrack background. Like, which, like, chicken and the egg, which came first? Man. The script, like, did they love that? Like, Rocky used to have the eye of the tiger. That's it. The phrase in the movie. Give it to the band. The band, it came, went through the label. They went to the band. They tried to get Queen. They couldn't get Queen. Oh, who's the band that we, like, sort of liked almost as much as Queen?
Yeah, he had heard another one of their songs on the radio and reached out to them. The craziest thing for me about this is that then Survivor ends up doing a bunch of movie soundtrack songs for this. It's like Jim Peterik in the 70s is like, maybe I'll just go back to jingle writing. No, I'll be in a rock band. And then, like, his 80s career is defined by, like, writing a bunch of really on-the-nose movie soundtrack songs.
Right.
I love it.
Like, he does one either for Karate Kid or for Karate Kid 2.
A lot of movies need this
energy.
They
do one for Rocky 4 because this is such a big hit. I mean, this is a huge hit. This is like, just like, I think it had one of maybe the longest run in the top 10 of the entire 1980s.
Yeah, I think that or Physical maybe were the top two.
So they bring him back for Rocky 4.
Yeah.
And it's why, like, those are their biggest hits are all these really on the nose movie soundtracks.
Yeah.
Like, all these guys in their Chicago way just can't get away from doing jingles, whether it's movie soundtracks or Real Men of Genius.
Andrew, this brings me to a little turnabout is fair play.
When you get $5, $5, baby.
Something that I pray and suspect that you did not come across in your Wikipedia meandering learning about this song. Eye of the Tiger was such a big hit and such a, like, iconic movie soundtrack. It's the apotheosis of movie soundtrack songs, what Survivor was able to achieve with this song. It was so big that 4 years later, somebody just funded a whole movie called Eye of the Tiger.
Wow.
With this song on the soundtrack. They just hit copy on Rocky III and they pasted it in to a generic macho action movie about an everyman who has to defend his neighborhood from a motorcycle gang.
No.
And it's called Eye of the Tiger.
That's so strange.
They named a whole movie. The song is so good.
The song became an idiom.
It had so much power behind it, so much cultural power. The song was an idiom that it could just spawn, just a whole movie came out of this song. Eye of the Tiger, now it's a movie now.
Yeah.
And my question to you, either of you are eligible to win, but of course I'm specifically directing this at my $5 nemesis.
Uh-huh.
Andrew, who is the star of Eye of the Tiger?
This came out in 86.
The movie came out in 86, 4 years later, four years after Rocky III. Who would star in a movie called Eye of the Tiger? Seems impossible.
I'm going to say Lorenzo Lamas.
Oh, incredible.
I'm going to guess Carl Weathers.
Mm.
That's a great guess.
Yeah.
Great guess. Who because, plays they, because they would pull him from the Rocky franchise and maybe put him in.
Is it Lorenzo Lamas?
Neither of you are correct. Lorenzo Lamas is a supreme guess. I applaud you for your guesses. The correct answer...
Utah! Give me two!
It's Busey!
It's Busey!
Oh,
Gary Busey?
Yes. Oh, got him!
No. I'm going to watch that.
Yes! I'm Andrew is one of the people I know in my life who is most juicy for Busey.
Oh.
I'm obsessed.
So I wanted to sneak in a little
bit
of trivia.
I went from being like, who cares? This is impossible. Like, pointless question to being deeply ashamed I didn't get it. The second time in a single episode I've been deeply ashamed.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to embarrass Andrew on air. Yeah.
Did Gary Busey ever host SNL?
He did. He hosted. Okay, this one's going to be...
Because he was nominated for an Oscar. People don't know Gary Busey's Oscar-nominated Oscar.
Yes.
All right, actor.
For Full Circle playing Buddy Holly.
That was what he was promoting when he hosted. 1979.
So. Wow, early years.
Yeah, early years.
Gary, wow.
I think there was a rumor at the time that he, it was one of the only times that they weren't sure if the show was going to happen because minutes before the show started, no one could find him. And then suddenly he just appeared right before they went live.
amazing Busey story.
Yeah.
Classic.
Classic Busey.
That's classic Busey.
Classic Busey.
Yeah. Oh, that's classic
Busey. That's fire.
But, and that's before, you know, Busey brain damage, the era of Busey brain damage, and but gives you a little clue that his mystique and his idiosyncrasies aren't fully about
his terrible motorcycle wreck.
His terrible motorcycle wreck and ensuing brain damage. There was a little bit of pixie-ish mystical stuff going on with his personality.
Yes.
Even in 1979.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe that his Oscar-nominated magic, playing the great Buddy Holly in 1979, a year in which the band Survivor is being formed, perhaps may have cast a spell on them as they drew their energy rising from the ashes of a band that had also died in a plane crash.
This is twisted.
Whoa.
And therefore, I'm declaring here on this podcast that Gary Busey is responsible for the success of Survivor.
Wow.
Oh, behave.
All right. Is it just me, or does all this talk make me want to at some point hear Gary Busey singing Eye of the Tiger?
You know what all this talk does make me want to listen to? The actual song.
Yes. So
strutting.
Good.
Strutting. I'm strutting. Pure strutting music.
Okay, so my favorite part of the song is coming up in a few seconds, and it's not even... It's... Okay.
Is it the part where they sing?
No, no. It's right before it. It's right here. Ready? This is it.
What did we just hear? You mean the funky bass right at that part?
The thing where it goes boom, 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 like right before he starts singing, where there's kind of just nothing there. There's just a little bit of space.
Where the bass just really gets in the pocket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? It's great. It's just rock and roll.
Here's what I heard. Yeah, cuts out just to the drums and the bass. We've had the lead guitars out there harmonizing. It's already really, really shreddy, but they dialed it back just to strip it down to pure strut, drum and bass, before the lyric comes in.
Yes.
Back on the streets. Where were you?
The vocal is perfect.
The vocal is perfect.
It's just unimaginable that they kicked Dave Bickler out of the band.
Yeah. Does Dave Bickler not sound like the most bully name from 1980? Just like a high school bully, like, oh, Dave Bickler punched me in the nose, you know?
Yes, absolutely. It's right? It almost sounds made up. It's like a Dirk Diggler.
Yeah.
Dave Bickler. Dave.
Yeah. I mean, at 100, it does not sound like a guy who would be the lead singer of a band called Survivor that puts out a song this perfect.
Yeah.
But at 100% sounds like a guy who's singing the Real Men of Genius Budweiser ads.
Yes.
Let's get Dave Bickler on this.
To me, it sounds like something you find out years later is the real name of someone you know as Tom Cruise.
That's so funny.
You know, like, he grew up in the Finger Lakes region as Dave Bickler and moved to Beverly Hills.
And became Dave Bickley.
Bickley.
That's B-I-C-L-E with an accent.
I don't want to gloss over your comment, Andrew, which is that the vocal is perfect.
So good.
Perfect.
And everyone knows this, but I'll just say it out loud. This is decades before the auto-tune era. This man is delivering this take on a microphone with nothing but his human man throat.
Just a naked larynx.
Just pure larynx. How does it work to sing this high and so pure? I'm in love. Don't lose your grip on the dreams of the past. You must fight just to keep them alive. Okay, I mean, we've already teased this. We've already teased a little bit that we kind of feel like the verse is filler, of course, but can we review it?
It is kind of...
Yeah.
It's kind of the perfect movie theme song, though, because it's like hinting at what is happening in the movie without getting too explicit about it.
Without being too
like,
specific, like, just in case you need to use
like
this song for
another
movie. Like,
you traded your passion for glory, you know, in Rocky III... Yeah. Rocky's gotten lazy at his training because he's so rich and famous. Like, but it's not getting too into like Rocky's a boxer.
Yeah, it doesn't mention boxing or anything.
Or it's motorcycle like, games.
We hear fight, but it's just vague enough about the movie Rocky III.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, you lost a match, but now you're back.
Mm-hmm. Right, but you finish the movie Rocky III and you hear it and you're like, Rocky did change his passion.
Yeah, and so did I.
Yeah. It works perfectly on the radio as not being about Rocky III, but it works perfectly at the end of Rocky III as being exactly about Rocky.
This song is about me. I gave up my passion for painting lead miniatures, and I focused too much on advancement in my career in the claims adjustment department of Progressive Insurance. I should have kept my eye on the tiger.
Eye on the tiger.
Yeah, I'm looking at tigers.
Wanted to be a zookeeper.
I always love this song that I definitely know its name. The Eye on the Tiger. Keep your eye on the tiger, son.
That song called Survivor, I love it.
One thing I love that they snuck in this like verse by committee here is, I'm going to assume, you know what, it's probably just by one guy, but I like to pretend that it was like,
whole group.
Came from the movie studio had input on it, then they sent it over to the label. The label execs knew it's going to be big because it's going in a Rocky movie, so they had some input on it. Then it made it down to the band. The band offered a rewrite. Then there's revisions, there's notes. You know, that's You know what I'm saying? Yes. Like, everybody knows it's going to be big. So 18 people wanted to get their fingers on it, you know, both because they want it to be a success, but also because they want to have touched it before it's on the big screen, you know. But there's one thing in this first by committee that I love, which is sort of like making sure you know that this is relatable. So many times it happens too fast, you know. Yes. Just kind of saying like, hasn't this happened to all of us?
Yes.
Could be you know. Every man.
This you know, guy when knows. Your passion turns into glory.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you trade it in.
You start doing infomercials instead of your boxing training.
So many times you have a great hit on the movie soundtrack, and then you cash it all in for a Budweiser ad.
Relatable.
That's so funny. It does really sound like he's trying to appeal to a lot of, just like, so many times it happens so fast. This guy knows what I'm talking about.
yeah, exactly. Don't you agree?
I mean, 100% in there, just to rhyme with past. They're just like past.
Past.
No, the past. Dreams of the past.
The dreams of the past.
When Rocky won in Rocky 2, and when he almost won in Rocky 1. The dreams of the past. What rhymes with past?
Do you ever wonder how many
100% in there for that.
Like songs people consulted rhyme, like rhymed dictionary on?
They definitely had a paper rhyming dictionary. We are on, I'll just give away this industry secret. Andrew and I always go to RhymeZone.com.
RhymeZone. That's
of course. That's, yeah. And its other chief rival, which I think is defunct, but at least the website still works, BRhymes.com. Yeah.
There was a while there where those two websites were responsible for, I would say, 90% of my comedy.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah. I would suggest that Survivor maybe didn't even have to use a rhyming dictionary to come up with past and fast.
The problem
is they didn't
They're
have
not
a rhyming
that
dictionary.
Smart. Next you're going to tell me they rhymed girl with world off the top of their head.
By the way, we should check the books on this, but there's a good chance that this is the 40th anniversary of the song, right? Didn't it come out in 1982?
It did come out in 82.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Just another reason Arthur picked it.
Yeah. Rocky probably came out in the summer. This episode coming out in the fall.
Oh, okay. So, you know. Yeah, you're probably
But we're close. You know, year-wise.
Yeah, it wasn't a Christmas movie.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking of it more as like the 50th anniversary of Richard Nixon's re-election. He's such a survivor. That's why I scheduled this episode. He's such a survivor. Which I'll try to release this episode on election day.
That's so funny.
What do you think they're back on the streets from?
Rising up. Yeah, rising
we're back on the streets.
It's also vague in general.
Yeah, we've been off the streets for a while.
I mean, when I think in the like...
It's not jail, is it?
When I think in the context of Rocky, I think about him jogging around Philadelphia training.
He's back on the streets working out.
Back in the streets working out.
As opposed to at home...
When I think about Survivor...
In his luxury at-home gym.
Yeah.
Dave Bickler is always wearing that weird beret... I don't know why, but he had this
Yeah, when they're marching
on.
In the music video, they're marching around the streets. Yeah,
it always looks like he's about to be in some sort of like political coup fight.
Oh, he looks exactly like Curtis Sliwa of Guardian Angels. He's like, he copped that guy's look, and like he's about to go rough up some thugs as a vigilante.
It
on
looks
the
like he's either in like a Chicago union or in a Chicago union busting organization, and he's like, let's go bust some fucking meat packers heads or vice versa. Okay. Let's go bust some scabs heads.
Okay,
that's just, you know, I don't know a lot about Chicago, but that's how I think.
Yeah, okay,
Chicago.
Well, let's see if we have any more clues. Just to keep them alive,
it's deep
So they say Rival, the song was originally going to be called Survival, because that rhymes with rival. Survival.
Right. And it was only at the very end that they put Eye of the Tiger at the very end of the chorus. And they kind of like, they kind of were like, look, the song's called Eye of the Tiger. Let's just lean into it. Let's just put Eye of the Tiger at the end of the chorus. And frankly, it would have been insane if they hadn't.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So, like, the verse just falls away once you get to this chorus. It's just, it's towering.
Yes.
You know? It's the Eye of the Tiger. You hit a new chord there, like, everything opens up. The guitars are playing big, open chords. And you just, you're in your vibe. At this point, I was looking at the berated Bickler coming down the street. I was glancing askance at him before then, like, not fully buying this story. As soon as he belts out "Eye of the Tiger" and he lifts up, like, to the notes just keep going higher and higher. At that point, like, I'm in a beret, I'm in a vest, I'm roughing up scabs.
And at the end of the chorus, you think he has nowhere else to go, and he has
just walks up to the high C.
It's crazy.
Very few human men on earth have the high C. You just can't do it.
Do you think that his vocal performance in the song is supposed to kind of mirror what the song is about? Like, is emblematic of, you know, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, he's really pushing himself to get to the top of his vocal range.
Yeah. I mean, what his vocal performance here is nothing short of athletic. Like, this is his version of working out to win the championship belt.
Jim Peterick wasn't the top Chicago jingle writer of the 1970s for nothing. That's a sort of subconscious symbolism that only an ad man can have. It's like, we're going to plumb the depths of our listener's subconscious.
That's so funny.
I think we have a second verse here that might offer us a few more clues.
Very short second verse.
Yeah, you could. Sometimes you want to
once
cut it to half.
Once you're that chorus, get back to it.
Yes, I agree.
We're face to face.
They only needed the one line, if you ask me. It's like, okay, I know. Stack the odds, sure. What was get back to the tiger?
They were back to it. Anything of note in that verse before I just live in this hook for the rest of my life?
I mean, they were just not. From a songwriting perspective, they kind of have that double first verse. I think of it almost being like verse one, verse two. Then you get to the chorus, and then it's like, once you hear the chorus, guys, let's just get back to it.
Yeah, so when you just get back to the verse, it's half as long.
Single length verse,
it's half as long, yeah. Oldest trick in the book. Mm-hmm. But what clues do they offer us? Not much. Face-to-face, staying hungry.
So I think what I learned on the subway ride over here is that this is a three-part song, which I didn't know before. So part one is back, you're back, okay? You're back from the streets. Yeah. Part
verse
two,
one.
You're staying hungry. It basically is like you're still in it.
Is the verse that we just heard.
That's the verse that we just heard.
Yeah, we're still in it. We're staying hungry. Yeah. We're not going to be jaded and like Rocky getting back in the gym.
Yeah.
Punching big sides of meat.
Yes. Big, yes. And then part three is going to be that you've made it to the top, and it's all about staying at the top.
Staying at the top.
Mm. I never knew that until this morning, that this song does actually kind of tell a little bit of a story.
Mm. A career arc.
Yes.
Okay, we're back to the hook. I just want to live here.
And a three-part story. It's the third Rocky.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
First when he loses.
Uh-huh.
Second when he wins.
He wins the second one.
Third when he loses again. But he has to get back to the top.
He wins at the end of three.
Yeah, doesn't he win at the end of three?
He loses and then he has to get back.
He loses and then he wins. You lose, then you win. That's how movies go.
I think the third one is the first one to have two fights.
Okay, this is part three. Oh, he rose up.
Got the glory.
That's it, right? Okay, yeah. So that was like a little recap of the first verse.
Mm-hmm.
But putting that first verse in the past is like, oh, everything I said, traded my passion for glory. Now we're just recapping it. You know what? I had the guts, and I got the glory. Yes. Gosh darn it.
Went the distance, an amazing lyric in that, like, you're just a suburban mom or dad driving your kid to school. Yeah, you went the distance. Like, it just works in the song. But I think technically our first boxing term in the song, right? Like guts? if you go the distance.
Oh yeah.
That is a boxing term. You know, just to like summarize the first three Rocky movies. In the first movie he loses, but his achievement is he goes the distance with Apollo
Creed. Because he's an amateur.
He fights all 10 rounds, loses on the decision of the judges. The second one, he beats Apollo Creed.
Wow.
In the third one, he loses to Clubber Lang at the beginning, played by Mr. T.
Because he lost sight of the tiger.
And now he's friends with Apollo Creed. Apollo Creed comes and says, Rocky, you used to have the eye of the tiger when we fought. Then he trains him up, and then he beats Clubber Lang. So I think the third one is the first one with two fights.
And Clubber Lang is like, you beat me, Rocky. That was a good one. You clubbed me right in the lang.
But the
that's right.
But the first one, he goes the distance.
Yes,
but he doesn't win. He
doesn't
loses.
Win. Yeah,
he gets honestly beat to a pulp.
Okay, and Survivor's just recap that for us here. Okay, thank you. Very helpful, Survivor. You've brought us up to speed that we're on the third Rocky movie, and now can we just live in the chorus for the rest of the song? It's it. They did it. They wrote the perfect movie soundtrack song.
You know who else I think had to have had a hand in this? If this played during the credits, like the Best Boy Union must have gone to Survivor or like done some polishing where they were just like,
what are you talking about?
We want people in their seats until the end of the credits.
Oh.
We want people to see the Best Boys.
Yes.
On the screen. We want to see craft services roll. Someone went to Survivor and was like, this is 90% of the way there, but we want the asses in the seat until the end of the credits.
Yeah.
So they see who the grips are.
Yeah, you're not just playing variations on a theme by the orchestra of whatever the Rocky theme was. Let the violins go off.
If this is playing during the end of Rocky 3, you're sitting until the end of the credits, and then you're just... standing up and clapping.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're applauding that, you know, the key grip and every it's absolutely.
Had some other thought that I lost.
Ooh, interesting synth there. I don't know if I noticed that.
Yeah, just padding it. So they snuck that in, just trying to get a little escalation. Then the guy left. That's all. That's it. Just trying to give it a little lift while Bickler can do a few ad libs. For some reason, they felt like they had to take this to 4 minutes.
I'm the tiger. I mean, probably so they could get to the Best Boy. They were like, the Best Boy Union passes this enormous bribe through the Meatpacking Union.
Yeah.
At Chicago, the unions are talking to each other. Mm. We've got to get through the Best Boys.
Yeah.
Oof. Terrific, huh?
It's just fantastic. Like I said, they shot for the moon and they landed on Mount Everest. You know, like they did it. They wrote the perfect movie soundtrack song. So good that it spawned a career of writing other movie soundtrack songs. It spawned a whole other movie just by force of
the
will of this
song. The movie soundtrack was so good, someone was like, what if we made a movie more about this song than the movie the song was in? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's
and
like
we title the movie the name of the song.
Yeah. The song impregnated a movie studio.
Wow.
And, you know, like, what could you possibly do that's better than this? Maybe you could take apart the verses a little bit. What's the story with the passion and the glory that we traded in? The guts and the glory. There's something there. We really don't know much.
Do we bring in... I mean, I talked about how the song was perfect in that it was kind of tangential to the Rocky story.
Mm.
But then when they got to Going the Distance, I got excited about that. Like, ooh, they found finally some boxing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to bring in more...
Yeah, punching
boxing
and hitting
stuff.
Yeah, what could be more,
boxing stuff,
what
more
could be
story,
more energetic
yes,
than just
more story about Apollo Creed, Clubber Lang.
Yeah,
and
if
Rocky.
There were, you know, verbs like uppercutting. Yeah.
What's his who's his cousin who's kind of a hanger on? What's that guy's name? Polly?
Polly Shore.
Yeah, Polly. He's his brother-in-law.
Who
Adrian's brother. Get that guy in.
Oh, Ray, that guy, yes.
Yeah.
What is that guy's name?
Yeah, Burgess Meredith is dead by the third one.
Do you know
Sorry.
His name?
Spoiler alert.
Burt Young? Yes, Burt Young. Okay,
Burt Young.
What? But you had
engineer extraordinaire John.
He came up with it.
For news
is that the character's name or the actor's name?
Actor.
That's the actor.
Is Polly? Am I right about
I think
Polly?
That's the
is
character.
Polly Shore in this movie? Like son-in-law?
we're hearing from our producer and our video engineer. Yes, Polly Shore is the star of Rocky III. Wow. But you had a very specific pitch for us.
Yes,
are they not dissimilar from our last episode with you, where you came in with a lot of ideas about John Lennon's Imagine?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm willing to hear it out.
So it's a really simple pitch. Okay. It's basically, I have the tiger, you have a body part, and you have an animal.
You have an animal, yeah. We didn't really talk about that, like, what does that even mean? What is the essence of a tiger that means anything to us?
Yeah.
You know? You used to have the eye of the tiger, said Apollo Creed.
Scary.
What the hell is he talking about?
It's the eye of a predator. You guys, it seems pretty clear to me. It's a scary predator eye.
Stalking its prey in the ocean's prey.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I accept that. But if I, as a boxer, want the power of any tiger body part, it's the big ass paws. It's the tiger bite.
Well, wouldn't you more like want like the punch of a chimpanzee or a punch of a gorilla? You
still want your opposable, rip a man apart.
You need your opposable thumbs to get into the glove.
That's really funny. The punch of the chimpanzee. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is the beauty of the song is you could really substitute just about any body part and animal in it. And I thought, well, what would I like to put in there? The neck of the donkey.
Wow.
Huh. I didn't see that coming.
It wasn't front of mind for me. I was thinking more about fighting animals, really.
Why the neck of the donkey of all animals?
Well, I think that... Because I think it sounds funny. So I think, the neck is a pretty useless body part other than that it supports your head.
The
neck is mostly there for just transmitting fluids.
Yeah, sort of a highway.
Up, fluids go up and fluids go down.
Yes, fluids.
And you don't want the
fluids
to come out this way.
No.
That's bad.
No, if they come out the side of the neck, it's doing it wrong. So when the neck is working, it's a it's a bidirectional highway.
Yes, it's a highway. It's a medium, basically. Mm-hmm. The neck is a medium.
Yeah, it's a doorway. Yeah,
some animals don't even have one.
No.
Some animals, their head's just on their body, like a boar.
Yeah,
a
boar. Sure.
I don't think a boar is really having a neck.
Yeah, probably technically does.
Anatomist might disagree.
Yeah, what about like a jellyfish? No neck?
No neck.
Yeah, no neck.
Snowman, not an animal, but also doesn't really have a neck.
There's an essence there. Eye of the tiger has the eyes and neck of the donkey.
The neck of the donkey.
It's all swallowed in the back throat with the N's and the K's.
I do like hitting those K's. Neck of the donkey.
Yeah, if you didn't know what the word meant, you're just learning English barely, the syllablery does sound aggressive.
It does. It sounds like you're cursing.
So you want us to do neck of the donkey. You.
Yes.
Because it sounds funny.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That's correct.
This is a shocking suggestion for a punch-up. I don't know if anyone has ever gone so straight to the heart of the matter before.
Well,
ask us to do a punch specifically to be funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I am kind of it's putting a lot of pressure on you guys, and you better come through, or else I will murder you both.
Wow.
Yeah. Whoa.
That's a first for the podcast too.
A murder threat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we've had tons of death on the show. People do walk in music for their own deaths. You know, there's songs about tragedy, but I don't think we've threatened each other, but I don't think a guest has come on here and threatened our lives before.
You're a man now, dog.
But fortunately, I'm confident that we can be funny enough, you won't murder us.
I'm confident of that, too.
We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to play you the punch-up of Eye of the Tiger, Neck of the Donkey.
Let's do it.
Let's punch it.
Punch it!
No, Arthur, you left us with a shocking suggestion. Most of our guests say, like, hey, I really don't like that this word is in the song. Can you take the word out? They say, this narrator is saying this, but I think he's lying.
Yeah, I don't believe him.
The narrator, you know, is thinking about this. Other people say, like, this song isn't specific enough. Like, let's get some more details in this.
Yeah, they want it
you
that way.
Said,
what way is that way?
What if you made the song funny?
Yeah.
Which is shocking. For a guest just to cut through the BS, honestly. That's what, I mean.
On a serious podcast like this?
I mean, I don't know if I'm even allowed to say this, but that's usually what we do.
Really?
Like, we always say that we make the songs better, but usually we're just trying to make them funny. So you just cut through the BS.
Yeah.
With Neck of the Donkey.
Sacre bleu.
And we rolled with it.
Arthur has this energy of coming on our show and trying to ingratiate himself with us by pitching us ideas, and we in turn are feeling the need to ingratiate ourselves with you by then executing your ideas so that you'll feel gratified and will come back on the show.
Yeah.
So we're all sort of equally desperate and insecure.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. The one weird thing about this punch-up, I will say, is Evan and I talked for a long time about what to do with the first verse.
Uh-huh.
And we just, I don't know if we've ever done this in one of our punch-ups before. We just left it the same.
Yeah.
Because it's like if you land on Neck of the Donkey in the chorus, well, you can't. That's got to be a strike, sneak attack.
That's a reveal.
Mm-hmm. You know, so.
I think that's. I don't usually think there are correct answers in art, but that's a correct answer.
There are some correct answers in comedy.
In comedy, yeah.
Yeah. And on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
They have correct answers. They have correct questions.
Right. There aren't correct. You're right. There aren't correct answers in Jeopardy. There's only correct questions.
Yeah,
that's a mind bender.
Did you ever try to reverse Jeopardy and like so it'd be like, who is Bill Clinton? And then the answer would be like, you know, this president was elected in 1992. You know,
it sucks.
It don't work very
well. It doesn't work very well.
They're kidding themselves.
Yeah,
It still makes me mad when they don't give someone points for not putting in the form of a question.
Yeah,
it's,
me too.
It's just like they said Bill Clinton. Like, who cares? Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
And in the same way, I hope people give us points for executing Arthur's idea.
Yes.
On this
I can't wait.
Which I will now play for you.
Hear the lyrics.
Yes.
For you. Right here.
Same energy.
Glad you didn't bring in the unsyncopated version of it.
Strutting so hard. No, I didn't. I could have. Definitely leave in the syncopation. I'm not an idiot.
Could you turn up on my headphones a tiny bit? Is that possible?
I'll turn it up.
Or the music, yeah. Love it so far.
Yeah, I don't know what about this part is so good.
Yeah, something about this. This one's really caught my attention. Rising up, back on the street. Who's the singer?
Yeah, I think we got the guy from the third Survivor lineup to sing this.
Yeah, and you made sure that he was castrated. It's the neck of the donkey, it's the throat of the ass, staying strong and a little bit grumpy.
I'm the neck of the donkey, links his body and head. Now these, not the hooves, just the neck of the donkey.
Yeah! Oh, you believe it. You believe in the power of the donkey neck. Oh. That's one thing you know about donkeys.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, this donkey might not even get in a fight, which is smarter than getting in a fight.
Such a mouthful. Last known survivor stalks his prey in the night. Whoops, wrong
lyrics are meant to say neck of the donkey.
You know.
Hey, 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 you hippie, hippie, hop. Walrus just can't be stopped. Straight out of Liverpool, call me the Titanic. The Biz MC made it both sides of the Atlantic. I'm rocking and rapping with my friends in Survivor. But once I got the mic, baby, I'm the cause.
John Lennon!
Lower back on the ropes. My rhymes will pop back up and KO a bloke.
He's back and he loves Rocky.
Oh, this is great.
With the distance with Apollo Creed. Club of Lang twice as dirty as Oliver North. So Rocky, get your shorts to the Jersey Shore. If you wanna get back that left hook barrage, you and Creed gotta sprint through a training montage. Nothing to kill or die for till you're in the ring. And Club is coming at you wearing all that bling. Hey, go easy on Stallone, Mr. T. He used to train in the freezer with a bag made of beef. Rocky Raccoon, I would hold your hand high up in the air once you're the champ. Right hook to silver hammer like my homie Maxwell. Clubber's head like the Liberty Bell. Don't let me down, my man Rocky. Love ain't all you need. You need the neck of the donkey.
Oh, wow.
Got room for some ad libs here.
Kind of sound a little like Axl Rose there.
Oh, you know.
Oh wow.
When you hear, oh, thank you, thank you, brother.
That was completely unexpected. John Lennon cameo. Makes me so happy. I feel like it's my birthday.
Wow. Well, when you come on the show, we continue to live in that counterfactual universe in which John Lennon lives into the 80s.
Yes.
And participates in all the culture thereof. Not only does he want to rap, but also he freaking loves Rocky. The movie rules.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter how countercultural he is. He loves Rocky.
Opening night, he's there.
Do you guys have a Rocky Raccoon reference in here?
Yes. Rocky Raccoon, I want to hold your hand.
Yes, 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 yes. Okay, that's great. This is fantastic.
Another important character named
Rocky. And that's back-to-back Beatles references right there. Rocky Raccoon, I want to hold your hand.
Yeah, don't let me down.
Right, hooks a silver hammer like my homie Maxwell.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's we're truly living in a counterfactual universe there
yeah.
where John Lennon likes the song. Maxwell
yeah,
Silverhammer.
Everybody yeah, knows he hates Maxwell Silverhammer.
It's his grandpa music.
But now it's been more than a decade. Now he's come he's around. It's just like it's part of his legacy.
I don't know what tickles me so much about the John Lennon rap, but I think it is just that to imagine the artist who we hold up as like the antithesis of commercialism.
Uncompromisable.
Uncompromisable.
Pure.
Just being like, Rocky III? Yeah.
Yeah, just yeah. so clearly being given a plate of shit and just eating it. Like, and I love also that I think doesn't he start all of his raps with basically the same way? Like, is it a hippie hop? Like,
yeah, so
yeah,
far.
He heard Rapper's Delight and was like, this is my delight. Now every rap will start this way forever. Yeah.
I believe he might have started the other one with the Neighborhood Walrus. Just can't be stopped.
Yeah.
We'll have to go back and listen to
it. Hippie hoppy juby. The Neighborhood Walrus just can't be stopped.
Well, after, at least in the Punch Up the Jam audio universe, all of John Lennon's raps start with him talking about how he's the walrus.
Yeah.
So you know it's him.
Yeah. I mean, presumably we're going to keep doing this podcast for another 5,000 to 10,000 episodes, and the John Lennon rap can come back a few times in that universe, and I mean, guarantee you he'll always start with hippie, hippie, hop.
The real challenge is if Arthur comes back and chooses a song, so far we've only done basically 80s songs. I guess Imagine is an 80s song, but we're imagining the 80s John Lennon.
Right.
Mm-hmm,
this is an 80s song, so we just had... We're like, wait. Also, you'd given us so much of this.
Oh.
We want to surprise our guests. We're like, how can we surprise Arthur? How can we?
You really hit me with the right hook.
And
you
we
know?
Hit him with the right hook.
Yeah.
We hit you with the right hook and then the left uppercut.
Wow.
That was the uppercut.
You know, I will. You knew one thing I just want to highlight is that when you have a lesser singer than Bickle delivering this song, it shows what a Titan Bickle is what a champion is. When you hear how high this song is for me to attempt to sing, you can hear me strain. It sounds like my trachea is falling out while I'm singing Neck of the Donkey.
If you had to sing this more, you would have to get vocal node surgery. You'd be kicked out of the podcast.
I would get a transplant of a neck from a donkey.
Maybe that's why the song was called that. How many takes of those specifically as high notes did you do? Like, could you only do it on one take?
It could only do a few. And like I alluded to earlier in the show, and not really giving away the secret sauce here, we're now living in a post-autotune world.
Right.
So I can judiciously take some version where I belted out, and then, you know, dial it in. Or whatever. So I did some pretty hairy sounding takes that I will never let you hear.
Oh, I do think that could be some good bonus content for the listeners.
Okay. I will post it to the Patreon.
Yes.
The untuned shit.
Excellent.
But back, my question about the Lennon rap.
About what?
Sorry to drag this back. My question about the Lennon rap is, so far we've only met 1980s John Lennon rapping.
Right. Ooh.
If you come back with a song, as if you know, if we're lucky enough to have you back, we're doing a song from the 2010s or the 2000s, like, is John Lennon's flow the same?
Oh,
is
interesting.
Is his flow always like this? Or in the 2000s, has he caught up and he's trying to chase Eminem? Or is he always in this kind of Run DMC zone?
Yeah, maybe he's doing what's like Amigos kind of thing, you know, like you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, or the triplet thing that like everybody arrived at, you know, about like 10 years ago, where like the beat is and the rapper comes in there like and they're like, and when I walked in the hand of no bond and that triple, you know. There's so many different ways that John Lennon could
rap. Think about that, but I don't want to trap you in the 80s. I don't want to trap you in the 80s.
Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot.
Something to think about for next time. Okay, thank you for being so generous, listening so generously to our take on Eye of the Tigers. Now Neck of the Donkey.
On your take, Neck of the Donkey.
It's a collaborative effort.
You know? You guys have made my year. I mean, this is amazing. This should be right up in the canon of great literature.
Oh, God bless. Thank
you
so much.
Well, I hope that someone hears it and makes a movie out of it. I hope that the next 4 years, I'll be watching a movie called, like, The Purge 6, Neck of the Donkey. Yeah, this is just the theme song that rolls
right.
In the credits.
It's not good enough to be its own franchise. But, yeah, it could be, you know, Friday the 13th, part 25, just sneaking Neck of the Donkey. Yeah. You know. Human Centipede Part 8, they stick a neck of the donkey in there.
Crawl.
Yeah. At some point, it's in my mind because at some point I did a guest. By the time this episode comes out, I think my guest appearance on Too Scary Didn't Watch will also be out, in which I talk about the movie Human Centipede. Oh.
Don't talk about it on this podcast. Everyone go listen to the other podcast. Evan,
I don't even have to describe the movie. Everybody knows what it's about, but just imagine there's a neck of the donkey in it. That's all I'll say. And we need to exit that before anybody thinks about body horror anymore. And I will exit that conversation by asking both of you guys, what is your walk-in in music? I want to know, what is your walk-in music for this week? I'll go first, so I sort of surprised you by pivoting to our final segment. And I just thought of training montages. That's it. That's it. I just want to walk into working out, and I want to use a song that nobody else knows of. So I found a recent song that I think I was served this on a playlist sometime where, like, you know how the algorithms are just getting to know us so deeply well? My TikTok For You page is just like only jazz guys doing weird covers of pop songs and stuff. Like, they know me. And this one was served to me one time. It's just an instrumental song that I will walk in to a gym. I'm ready. I don't even care what I'm working out to. I'm training for something huge. Probably fighting Mr. T. But by the time I start working out and punching sides of beef, lifting huge chains, you know, when you do the double dutch with the chains, at some point Rocky and Rocky 3 trains by just bashing cinder blocks with a sledgehammer. I will do that and level up.
That's
to this
expensive
song.
You gotta buy all those cinder blocks.
Yeah, this song is called Racing Hearts by Maddie McGuire. I would die for this genre, just like now synthwave retro, like pastiche of 80s crap. I love it.
Yeah.
I would ride a city bike to this all the way uptown.
Yeah. And 100% she was just like, I want to ride a pastiche of the music from Rocky 3. Not Eye of the Tiger, but like whatever other synth music is happening in there.
And murdered it. So if you're listening to the Walk-In Music playlist and this comes on at your house, like, you're immediately going hard doing chores. Just like whatever's in front of you, you're now training on that.
Yes. Sweat is always involved with the song.
Yeah. That's my walk-in song, Racing Hearts by Maddie McGuire.
Wow.
That was excellent.
Andrew, what'd you bring?
Walk-in song. Oh, I brought a song. There's one detail about the history of Survivor's lineup that was very funny to me, which is they started out with an original bass player, an original drummer that had been survivors of the Chase plane crash. Right. I think by just not being on the plane.
Wait, so they were in Chase?
They were in Chase. Three of the original guys from Survivor were in
Chase.
How
big is Chase? This is like, it's like a 10-person band because they got a brass section.
It's a lot of trumpets.
They got the brass section.
It's kind of a sort of a dickheaded name now that I think about it, to call your band Survivor. Like,
they'd be like, no, oh, those other guys, we didn't make it. Right?
But they don't
Survivor.
Have to worry about hurting their feelings.
Yeah, that's true.
What about their family's feelings?
So Peterick and Sullivan thought that they were like a little too jazzy. I mean, Chase is quite jazzy.
It was pretty jazzy.
And they went to a concert at a place in Los Angeles called, I think I'm getting this right, Flipper's Roller Boogie Palace. Flipper's Roller Boogie Palace.
Wow.
And they saw,
I just grew up a little
a
bit just
drummer
hearing that name.
And bass player playing a show there. Like, is this a concert hall? Is this just like a house band for people roller skating? And they saw a bass player and drummer that they were like, those guys, they're replacing our longtime friends that we survived a plane crash with. And they kicked those other guys out of the band and got these two guys from Flipper's Roller Boogie Palace. So I was just thinking about Flipper's Roller Boogie Palace.
Uh-huh.
And this is the song I'm playing while I'm skating out onto the floor in Flipper's Roller Boogie Palace. Wearing the shortest shorts possible.
Oh, yeah.
Midriff bearing shorts, but like a big denim jacket.
Oh, this is great. You're going on Family Feud later in the day.
Yeah, and this is Chase's Get It On.
This is the song, Get It On, by Chase.
This is the song by Chase. With a drummer and bass player that apparently are too jazzy for Survivor.
Wow.
This is like the...
It's like a little Chicago going
like
on.
Like the band is so big, you can't get them all on one plane.
Yeah.
That's what saved their life.
Yeah, it sounds like Chicago or Blood, like, Sweat, and Tears.
There's like 20 people in this band. You're like, the six of us are flying, the other 14 of you guys are driving. We got it. We got a...
Here come the trumpets.
No high school trumpet section is going to nail this. Maybe the top two trumpet players are going to nail it.
Yeah.
Everybody else is just splatting through it. There's about to be the crazy trumpet lick, too. That's so...
It's too jazzy.
What was Mr. Elliott
thinking? This song is rocking, but it's just one shade too jazzy.
Okay, here's the crazy...
This is where you do your...
Here's the crazy trumpet
and
thing.
It's the pinnacle of your skating.
Yeah, and the skating...
You spread your legs
doing the
super wide.
And doing a spin at the same time.
And Apollo Creed comes between your legs.
If you're in high school marching band, this is where all the flags start throwing their flags back and forth to each other.
Now we're in... This is too jazzy. I mean,
I love this song, but it's never going to be the theme song to a movie.
No.
And if it is, you know what? You get up in the theater, walk out before you see who the best boys in the grips were.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Don't even worry about finding out if Rocky won the movie.
Yeah, let alone craft services. But, you know, I was just impressed that you used that song to walk into a roller rink and show off your moves. I was positive you were going to use it to walk in to a lovemaking session with those lyrics that say in that first pre-chorus, I'm going to tell you just what I'm going to do. I'm going to make love to you.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like you use that song and that attitude while doing the roller skating for like the peacocking and to try to like entice someone to be interested in you. But I honestly don't think that's a good thing to be screaming while you're walking into the boudoir later that night or after five or six
days. When you take somebody home from the roller rink is when you put on the vinyl record with a song about roller skating.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
What's your walking song, Arthur?
Mine is simply a song that I really like. It's called My Roommate by The Village People. Everyone knows YMCA. Everyone knows Macho Man. Mm-hmm. Most people know In the Navy.
Yep.
But no one knows My Roommate, and it's a song that the Village People made from their album Cruisin', which is it's an album containing six songs, all of which sound nearly identical to YMCA. Mm. My Roommate is one of them, and it just happens to be about having a roommate who's too loud.
So relatable.
Yeah. Okay.
Was this released post or pre-YMCA, do you know?
That's a good question. I think it was released... This might have even been on the same album as YMCA. Okay.
Oh, listen to that clav.
Very disco-y at the beginning there.
Yeah, where are you picturing yourself when you hear this song?
I mean, I guess because I'm picturing, that's a great question, Hell's Kitchen in a small apartment with the loud roommate that you'll hear about.
Yeah, you're post-college, so you've got a fifth-floor walk-up,
yep,
and
fifth
you're sharing with three other guys.
Yeah.
For sure. 10th Avenue. You're not yep. close to the subway.
52nd? Here we go.
Oh, he's gonna tell us a story.
Yep.
I swear to you people, it must be my fate. The cards were against me, now there's no escape. I have this here problem.
Come on.
Keeps me up late. My roommate.
He's the greatest dancer of all time.
I don't know. This guy sounds kind of fun. But does he do the dishes?
That's the eighth verse. Okay, get ready for it.
I've never heard this before. This is
so many games.
This song is absolute lunacy. He is a dancing fool.
I'm pinned this note. Took your best coat. My roommate. He took his coat.
He took his coat. That is bad roommate. Yeah. This plays into basically my overarching belief about the Village People is that every song they have is just canon in the same universe. They are creating a sitcom with their whole body of work, and with YMCA they set the setting, mm-hmm. and then one guy wants to be in the Navy, separate song about the bad roommate who just wants to dance all the time. He's got this one wacky idiosyncrasy that every time he's entered the room he just does his one funny Kramer thing. Every time he comes in he's always dancing too loud.
Yep.
Oh, and here's my other buddy over here. He's a real macho guy. He's just, you know what is funny about him? He's just macho. All day. Every time he comes in, he's flexing, he's bragging. What a macho guy.
But in that Village People sitcom world, mm-hmm. 100% all five of the Village People are living together in the same apartment, and each one of them is singing this song about the other four Village People. Right?
Oh, yeah,
like,
totally. Yeah.
Each one of them is like, I'm the good roommate. I'm not the one who's not filling up the ice trays, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, and the other ones are like, he's the one who's not filling up the ice trays. Yeah. When you move in by yourself, everyone realizes, like,
yeah,
I don't always fill up
the
ice
trays.
I love
that. That makes it a little bit of a psychological thriller, you know.
Yeah.
Each one projecting onto the others. My roommate.
Great song, right?
Thanks for introducing me to that song. Yeah. Great pick. Where can people find you and follow you online?
My Instagram thing is ArthurMeyer13. And I do have a couple of projects in the works, but probably stuff that's a little too early to really talk about. But again, watch this show, Dinner with the Parents. It's going to come out next year on this network called Freevee, which I don't know if people have heard of it, but it's a branch of Amazon.
Is it free?
It is free, and it is TV.
Freevee. That's free. Yeah. I see. Okay, I'm picking it up now.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I want a quick bite, I would watch a Quibi.
Yep.
But if I want to watch TV for free,
you'd watch a freebie. And we all know how well Quibi did.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Because I don't want quick bites.
No.
No, I like to dive in.
Yeah. Quibi looked at the marketplace where people are just like, you know what I love more than anything is binging hours of TV.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Quibi was like, but what if?
What if we made it quick bite? 12 yeah. seconds?
Yeah. Well,
Arthur, thank you so much for coming on.
Guys, thank
you so
much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for bringing us Neck of the Donkey / Eye of the Tiger. Is just a joy to take a crack at a legendary song like that. If you like Neck of the Donkey and the John Lennon rap, you can get that punch up and all the rest of our punch ups on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/GregoryBrothers. You can follow Evan at Get Some Evan. You can follow me at A Rose Gregory. And we're gonna be back next Thursday with another episode of Punch Up the Jam. But we won't be talking about the neck of the donkey.
That's true. We're definitely gonna be back. I don't know what we're gonna be talking about.
This is the only episode we're ever gonna talk about the neck of the donkey.
Yeah. That happens once and once only. Will we talk about John Lennon rapping again? Probably.
Yeah.
How are we gonna surprise Arthur again? I don't know. I don't know.
Lennon better come back, though.
Could have been anything, though.
I love rapping Lennon.
The tusk of the walrus. Think about it. Could have been anything. A walrus, you know, looks really slow. It is on land, but the things, you know, you're talking about like a 4,000 pound animal. This thing will take you to the house.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
You've been listening to Punch Up the Jam.
That was a HeadGum Original.